Philip Morgan.
Is this thing on? Hey, listen. Hey.
Yes, it's on. We have recovered from our tech problems, and here we are.
We're back.
Sweet. Listen, and I'm handheld today, Philip.
Yeah, you're rocking it. Rocking it freestyle.
Back to my rap roots.
Yeah. How's it feel? Is it different when you're grasping the mic in your hand?
Different than what?
Good question. Different than when it's on a boom.
Yeah, it's more personal. Mm-hmm. I like doing both. Yeah. Like, you know, the boom is always a prop. Like, you know, you watch James Brown perform or Steven Tyler and you're like, oh yeah, the boom is part of the show.
Yeah.
It's right. Not just a thing to hold the mic.
Speaking of James Brown, I'm hoping your wife comes in at a certain point in this podcast and like puts a cape on you. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of get up and throw it off and then they put the cape on you again. Did you ever remember seeing the James Brown cape bit?
So I did see James Brown live before he died. Uh-huh. And someone came out and put a cape on him.
Okay.
He was a little too old to do a full split though.
That was the cape routine. He's been doing that for a long time, since probably the 70s at least. Was he all coked out when you saw him?
Right. Hard to say. I would say that's probably his natural state. So I'm not really sure.
Okay. I'm not sure if he ever got off speed and cocaine, but there was definitely a period where he looked like a man on a mission to get as much cocaine in his system as possible.
Yes. Now, I'm going to break the third wall here. Philip, can you kill your screen share?
Oh, whatever.
I'm staring at myself right now. So, Philip, I want to promote something. And today, this show, offlinepodcast.rocks, is brought to you by Sales in 30. What is Sales in 30? Well, it's a video series that I'm doing on LinkedIn for free. And I'm now putting it up, and it's available to you right now if you go to salesin30.com as an online course. So you can sign up totally free, and I will tell you what you need to know to transform the way you sell as an independent consultant within 30 days or less. So I'll be talking to you about process and mindset and how to have more effective conversations. And the videos are going live as we speak. So go ahead and sign up. And I hope to see you there. That's salesin30.com. And it can be the number 30 or spelled out 30. You'll get to the same place.
Dude, that's amazing. This is the first time I've seen this. So I typed in salesin30.com.
Okay.
Just to disambiguate that for folks. Did you buy both domain names?
I did.
Look at you. You just got all the bases covered. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, Philip.
And I'm looking at this like very handsome page that describes what I'm going to get. And there's a couple videos and I clicked get access and it's like free, but wanting my email address, which I think is totally fair. And shoot, maybe I'm going to sign up right now.
Go on and get it, buddy.
Confirm. I'm in. That's awesome. Cool. I think I'll benefit from checking that out myself.
Tell me what you're promoting today, sir.
I'm going to promote again the workshop I promoted last week. No one's emailed me about it, which is fine. I'm not, my feelings aren't hurt.
His feelings are hurt.
4 of 7 seats are sold. I've got a few seats left. It's a workshop on how you make that decision. And it's not like me just saying how you do it, but it's actually guiding folks through. You're a generalist. You've got options for specializing, but you don't know how to make the choice. You're afraid. You're feeling some fear. It's helping you move out of that situation and move into a place where you have got some candidates for how you're going to specialize. Sounds very simple. And if that is simple for you, in reality, good. I'm glad. It's not simple for everybody. And the workshop is meant to help with that. The price is $600 if you get the early bird discount. And you need to act lightning fast if you want that. Because when this goes to air, you'll just have 2 days to get that early bird discount. $600, and then it goes up to $800. So if you're interested, email me at philip@philipmorganconsulting.com. That would be how you take action on this. Actually, I was going to say this rare offer, but I'm going to run this workshop again. So if now's not the right time, don't sweat it.
Oh, you're ruining your scarcity, Philip. You have to act like it'll never happen again.
You know, that's such bullshit. I mean, if it's real scarcity, fine, but I am just so not into creating artificial scarcity. It feels wrong, and I think it is wrong, actually. To me, it's like a form of deception. And I know that's not what you're suggesting. You're just joking, but I couldn't help but get on my soapbox for a minute there.
Yeah, no, I was joking. It is a form of deception, but I just wanted to say about your workshop now, disclaimer, I haven't taken it, and also a second disclaimer, Philip pays me nothing if anybody listening to this signs up, but what he does is excellent, and it's a precursor to creating a magnetic attraction for people to come into your business as leads. So I'm a huge supporter of your work, Philip. I hope if anybody listening to this is interested even remotely in positioning as a strategy to start to attract more leads, they would check it out. And that's my unpaid endorsement.
You know, I talked to a guy today who's been a client of mine at various points, and he is on like this mission to figure out how to market himself. And so he's like covering every area. He's finding people who have some, you know, information resource and kind of getting on their list and paying attention to them. And he said that part of his approach to that is to check out like two or three viewpoints on the same thing. So he was saying, you know, he's like paying attention to two or three people who talk about generating leads on LinkedIn. Yeah. And two or three people who talk about, you know, digital marketing. And he was like,
Broad topic.
There's no alternative to you, Philip, is what he said to me today. He's like, there's nobody else that I can tune into who's like covering the same topic you are, which made me think two things. One is like, well, that's kind of cool. Like I sort of own a market position and I'm like the only option. Mm-hmm. And then the other was like, well, I warn people against that because that actually means you're some kind of, you know, pioneer. And as they say, the pioneers get the arrows, the settlers get the land. So I can take a few more arrows as a part of carving out this territory in the market, I guess. But anyway, it has involved taking some arrows. And those arrows are, you just have to invest a lot to generate the kind of, you know, financial results you'd like. Total tangent, but I just thought I'd mention it.
Well, actually, invest a lot to get the financial results you want. I started ranting prior to this call, and you immediately said, hang up the call right now. We got to record this.
Yeah.
And what I was ranting about is there seems to be a drive, or I don't know if it's a misconception. I don't know exactly how I would characterize it, but I talk to a lot of folks who come with some flavor of they want to run part of their business only and let other people run other parts of their business. And it's always in an effort to protect their precious time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this is a fine line because your time is precious. And I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Ahmad Munawar, yesterday, and he goes, you know, because time's a non-renewable resource. And I was like, yeah, well said. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's true. However, I find it hard to imagine a business that thrives without time as a key ingredient. And with the owner saying, I'm just going to continue to protect my time and not do a little bit more, because there's lots of people out there who are willing to do more than you are, especially if you have that mindset. Mm-hmm. But what's your feeling on this protecting your time versus spending a little bit more time with people who email you or people who want to talk to you on the phone or whatever it is?
Yeah, well, I certainly think there is an element of like, I don't think anything I could say would be appropriate for every situation. I think it would have to be like, okay, where is your business in its maturity from brand new venture to something much more, you know, mature and grown up and sophisticated? That's, to me, that's one aspect of it. And then the other is like, what are you trying to build? Because I know what I'm trying to build, and I think I may at some point have to have people who help me run the business.
Yes.
To get where I really want to go. But right now, it's a one man show, and it's going to be that way for a number of more years probably. So with that as a constraint, I'm like choosing to not remove myself from any aspect of the business, but that means I have to look at other things like saying no or not doing things. And I know this is getting kind of hand wavy and abstract, but I guess I'm just saying that I can't think of any just blanket guidance I would give anybody around that, other than I do think there's this kind of sexy idea that a lot of us come across that, and I would trace some of it back to the 4-hour work week.
Yes.
And I feel like not great anytime I like single out a certain person for criticism, and it feels like I'm singling out, Tim Ferriss for criticism.
Tim Ferriss can take it. I'm pretty sure he's not listening to this, so you're golden. Go for it.
There's something about it that, like we're publishing this online, and it just feels like, I don't mean to attack the guy, but if I can criticize the set of ideas that is pretty tightly associated with that book and therefore with him, it's, this idea that you can just, if you do things the right way, you can just kind of escape the need to do a lot of hard work to build a business. Maybe that's the core idea I'm criticizing.
Yeah. I think it's complicated, right? So yeah. I think this discussion about how much time should I put into my business and what responsibilities do I need to take on becomes overly simplified to either I'm a hustler and I work 20 hours a week. That's the Gary Vaynerchuk model.
20 right? hours a day, I think is what you meant to say.
Yeah, sorry.
You said week.
20 hours a day.
I'll take 20 hours a week.
Yeah, right. So 20 hours a day, you know, I'm just like always working. And if you're not that dedicated, then you don't want it enough and you're never going to succeed to the level that you can.
Right.
And then on the other side of it, it's more like the 4-hour, it's either a 4-hour work week or like this exaggeration of work-life balance where it's not, 8 hours a day and then go have a life, and like not just have a life, but go spend time with your family, like do things, mm-hmm. which I think is important. Right.
Yeah.
And so there's this sort of fetishization of the ultimate entrepreneur hustler who's always working, or on the other side of it, how do I only work 5 or 10 hours a week because that would be great and I deserve it.
Right.
And there, it almost comes with like a sense of entitlement. And I think the truth obviously lies somewhere in the middle, and that middle is gigantic between 4 hours of work a week and, 140, whatever it is. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we can probably say some interesting things about that middle territory. But before we go there, why do you think, I think you just put your finger on something really interesting. Why do you think we're drawn to these sort of polarized extremes? I mean, maybe it has something to do with how a lot of us affiliate with political parties or ideologies. Is it just easier to sort of see yourself reflected in an extreme version of something? What do you think?
Definitely a psychological principle at work here.
Yeah, sure.
The first thing that came to my mind was not political ideology. It was heuristics, right? So we create rules of thumb for the world. Mm-hmm. Look both ways before you cross the street. Right?
Yeah. Mental shortcuts. Yeah.
Cheap is always an inferior product. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Like there's all these rules that we have that we don't think about.
Right.
And what they are models to make sense of the world because of how much information is coming at us in any given day. Mm-hmm. And I think if you identify as I'm someone who isn't just out for success in business, I want, all these other things. I want personal relationships and I want a great family life. You're going to be more predisposed to like the 4-hour work week model. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that means you don't think you have to work hard. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you would be more predisposed to one side or the other.
Right. You're saying worldview is too strong of a word, but yet it's a sort of way of seeing things of like, well, that's a sort of shortcut to get where I want, where I can have this leisure time or this, you know, free time to use how I wish.
Well, let's not devolve into a political discussion here, but since you bring it up, one thing that we can say that's factual is the polarization of political opinion in the United States has grown dramatically in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
People who were conservative or were liberal 20 years ago would now both be considered moderates, right? So people who are conservative are way more conservative, and people who are liberal are way more liberal than they were.
Yeah.
And I do think there is an aspect of intellectual laziness to that. But I don't know. It's like that one's a complicated one. But to your question, why were we drawn to the polls? Or that is to say one side of the extreme or the other.
Right.
I believe that it's just a much easier story to tell and understand for most people.
Do you think there's an element of like sort of tribal identity as well, where there's this feeling of like, you know, people like me are, or you just, I don't know, you kind of see yourself reflected in Gary Vaynerchuk. Like he embodies some kind of ideal you have about yourself as being a hustler and, you know, you wanting it so bad that just you'll go to these extreme levels of work and output and so forth.
Well, there's an element of aspiration on both sides.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to own the New York Jets. That's Gary Vaynerchuk's stated goal. And a lot of people are like, damn, that's a baller ass goal. And it is, of course. Right.
Sure.
But I'm also like, is he going to know his children? Like, I wonder.
Yeah.
And maybe he will. Maybe he can balance all of that. And then on the other side, there's an aspirational element to like, I want to travel the world and live on the beach. And, you know, I don't begrudge the 4-hour work week just to pile onto this intellectual laziness argument, because most people think about just the headline or the end result, which is, you know, his big thing in that book was hire virtual assistants and be deliberate about the processes in your business. But he never skipped over the step of having to figure it out on his own and then train people to execute. I mean, it took him years to get to the point where he had a 4-hour work week. Mm-hmm. He didn't start that way.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that often gets lost in these discussions.
Yeah. Well, to me, that's an important thing to acknowledge, is that we're kind of drawn to these, to think about ourselves in terms of these examples outside of ourselves, these models or these ideals or these personified ideals that are just like extreme versions. And, you know, it's like the Buddhist third way thing, like the thing that's going to work is somewhere in the middle. It's that third way for most people, I think. And so to me, like, I'm thinking about a couple things right now a lot. And one is like this question of longevity, which I posted about in our mastermind group earlier today. This, like, what I'm doing in my business now, I have this strong feeling like it needs to have a longevity component to it. It needs to be something that can work for a long time. I don't want it to be a flash in the pan. And there's two elements to that. One is like the actual success of what I'm doing. For example, you know, you think of startups that get really popular for a while and then they kind of fizzle. Like, I don't want my business to fizzle out, but also I don't want my interest in what I do to fizzle out. And so to reflect on that in light of the question you're asking, could I spend, let's say, 4 hours a week, 5 hours a week answering emails from random people for the rest of my life? And I don't know the answer to that question, honestly. I really don't. So maybe that will have to change. But right now, I'm pretty open about spending time trying to help people who there's potentially no, they may never give me money. Or, you know, they may seek out my help and I may say something that completely answers their question and they never come back. They never give me money and I've actually helped them for free, instead of charging them multiple thousands of dollars to do that. And right now that seems fine. And I don't feel like I need to protect myself from those people or send them away or send them to a form or say, well, here's, you know, swipe your credit card and then I can answer your question. But I don't know how long that can last. I really don't.
Meaning you'll have higher value activities to pursue and someone else can answer those emails, or you just won't want to answer them?
I really don't know either. I hope if I'm doing things right in my business, it's a yes to the first question, that hopefully there will be higher value activities that I'm focused on. But, you know, one person I admire and feel like is maybe a model for how my business might unfold is Blair Enns, and his business Win Without Pitching. And he does stuff that seems fabulously wasteful to me from a time perspective.
Like what?
And this is not like a criticism at all. This is just like, I'm trying
like
to
being on, like being on my podcast.
That's a great example of him, like just wasting his
time. Yeah. Like, man, Blair, come on.
What were you thinking, Blair? No. This may sound like, you know, me saying what he does seems to me wasteful. It seems like a criticism, but it's actually not. It's just that I'll just tell the story. So, you know, I was at this event in Nashville with David C. Baker, and Blair attended the event, and he showed up like on the last day of this 2-day event. And, there might have been snowstorms, but I think he basically spent two full days traveling to this thing. That's the part where I'm like, wow, from my perspective where I'm at now in my business, that seems wasteful. Like, why would you spend 2 days traveling to a thing where you talked for, I think you talked for about 2 hours.
Okay, this brings up such a good point. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. And I know it's not from his perspective because he probably wouldn't do it. So I'm not saying it is wasteful. I'm saying from where I'm at in my business, like if I did that all the time, I'd have to sacrifice what seemed like more important or more valuable activities to do that. But I bet from how he's got things set up now that, you know, there's some payoff for that, or it makes sense somehow. It's not wasteful. Anyway, what's the point that brought up?
Well, first of all, I would like to acknowledge that you hate travel more than anyone I've ever met.
okay, so, point taken. Yep. So do not disagree with that.
But the other point I was going to make is you answering emails for people for 4 or 5 hours a week, say, which is a lot, by the way. I don't spend that long answering fan mail because, let's face it, I don't have enough fans.
I get more fan mail than you do. Just wait, though. Give it a year. It'll be different.
You owed me one. Okay. So, but when you think about Blair, you know, for him to travel for a couple days, the context of this is he's going to a conference. People paid a lot of money to be there. Uh-huh. They're highly self-selected. They're familiar with him and David C. Baker, his podcast partner and kind of part crime.
Yep.
And also a client for Blair is probably worth, I don't know, minimum $10,000, $20,000 for his training
program. Blair's moved, apparently, I don't have any inside information here. This is just me, what I see when I look at his website. I think he's moved to a more high-touch sales model. So a lot of the details about his premium program are no longer just right there on his website. They used to be. Last time I saw, I think it was $8,000 per person for 1/4 of a year of training, and the whole program is 4 quarters. So yeah, you know, maybe a client just is there for 1/4, their minimum $8,000 value in terms of revenue, and maybe more like 16 or, 20 or 30.
Right. And like, you know, I would love to move to a model that's more like that, where I'm charging more. And the reason is that I'm finding, even early in this new version of my business, is it's hard for me to give people the time that I want to give and give them change that I want them to undergo. Mm-hmm. based on lower rates and having a volume business. Like you just can't, you can't give a piece of yourself to that many people, over time. Now, on the flip side of that, I don't often hear extremely successful entrepreneurs complaining about, you know, should I answer this email from someone or is this sales lead worth my time? I think part of it is like, they just know how to spend their time a little bit more effectively. So they wouldn't even think twice about it. They just do it or not.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think they also realize the importance of customers and knowing your business.
Yeah.
So whether it's outsourcing or just like feeling bothered because someone wants 30 minutes of your time on the phone, I find it a little bit mystifying that people think that this is some sort of burden that should be discussed for hours. It's like, no, in that time, you could have just had the phone call. Just go talk to the person.
Would you say, I'm going to make a sort of absolutist or simplistic claim. Would you say that that's one of the easiest differentiators for your business, not in terms of your marketing, but in terms of the actual customer experience of just like giving a shit, showing up? Those maybe are some of the easier differentiators to create.
Yeah. I don't know that showing up consistently is easy for everybody.
Yeah.
Certainly it's not easy for me every day. Like to, you know, today was a slow day and I think I spent 5 hours on the phone.
Perhaps I should have said simple because you're right. Not easy.
It's mechanical, right? Anybody could choose to serve well,
right,
and to serve often.
Right. Doesn't require a lot of sophisticated thinking, a lot of business training. It just requires sort of being human and being available, right?
Yeah. And like give the experience that you would want if you were on the other side of it. And if you can honestly say you're doing that or even just completely smashing those expectations and giving such a better experience than people would expect, like that's how you're going to create word of mouth and referrals and, you know, a lot of essentially karma, right? Like people are going to say good things about you if you give them a wonderful experience.
Yeah. The few times I've had to use Apple's phone support have had that quality of like, oh, and it's been a couple years since I think I've had to do that. So this might be out of date, but I remember it was a distinctly different experience. It was like, oh my gosh, this is a person who is not following a script. They understand the language I'm speaking at a native speaker level and communicate pretty well and don't like exude false politeness. And it just felt like a human interaction. And it had that quality of like, wow, this is what I used to experience, you know, 10 years ago when I knew the secret number to call to get the really good Dell support engineers back in my, you know, network administration days.
Right.
I'm like, oh, this, not everybody has given up on this model. Not everybody has tried to do the race to the bottom in terms of the cost of providing customer support.
Well, I think I told this story about my Bose headphones when they crapped out. I mean, they just sent me a brand new pair for free and they were like 4 years old and like three models back. And I returned a pair of headphones that I bought recently that weren't Bose and went out and bought another pair of Bose because of it. Yeah. 'Cause exactly, that means so much to me, or my laptop. Yeah, I spend more on an Apple, but if I have a problem, I walk into the store and they figure out a way to address it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the most convenient, I can get a human being to help me immediately.
Yeah.
And that has a huge amount of value. Now, let me ask you this. So there's this quantity versus quality argument when you think about time, right? So on the one hand, some people will say you got to work more than anybody else. Mm. And I do think there's something to that. And on the other hand, people will say, no, you just have to work smarter than everyone else. Mm. And obviously that's where leverage comes in, right? Mm. That's code for like, how can I make 1 hour worth 10 or even 100 or 1,000 hours of someone else's time? How do you think about that in your business? Like, do you think because I know you worked for 30 hours a week for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
something
right?
Like that. Yeah. I had a 3 day a week work schedule
And 3 days, 10 hours a day or something, right?
Probably. I do when I work, tend to work long days because I work from home. It's just, I'm not great at measuring my time, but let's just say for sake of conversation that, yeah, it was something like that. I worked Tuesday through Thursday for a while and had these four day weekends.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, what was the question?
So the question is, do you think that if you just did the 30 hours a week forever, you'd be able to achieve what you wanted in your business? Or do you think you need the time and you need the leverage or the sort of quality in how you're applying your time?
No, I don't think I could get where I want to go without some flexibility to sprint. And to be clear, that did not last very long, that 3 day thing. Like I lost a whale client and it was like, oh crap. And, you know, compensated by, saying, well, I'm back to a 5 day a week schedule, and which sometimes right. became a 6 day a week schedule. And so the way I think about it is maybe not so flattering to myself, but basically I just don't think I'm disciplined or wise enough to be able to pack what needs to be done into the same size container every week.
Yeah.
Or to fit it. You know, I'm not that savvy with my time management, to be honest. So I feel like sometimes I need to use time in a really wasteful way and have a lot of it and just kind of be extravagant and wasteful. And in retrospect, it's so easy in retrospect to say, well, that was dumb. I should have not done that. Like I can point to probably dozens of things that look like that, where I just, there wasn't any other way for me to find out other than the dumb, slow, wasteful way. And, you know, of course, in hindsight, like that's a lot of what I'm really selling people when they hire me to help them is like, let me help you avoid the dumb, wasteful way.
Right.
So there's some benefit to me experiencing the dumb, wasteful way, because I think that creates like a, you know, expertise that is a real asset to others. But I would never claim that I could just, I'm so good at managing everything that I could just always make a 3 day thing work. It just, my business doesn't feel that way. I know there's probably people in my life that wish it were otherwise, but I don't feel that wise, honestly, and that disciplined and that in control of things. So I think sometimes I just kind of power through things in an inefficient way to get where I want to go. And maybe, you know, each iteration, maybe I get a little better, but that's how it is for me. How is it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a side of it. You know, I think about experimentation and, you know, in tech, everybody talks about growth hacking. Yeah. And there's a rigor to it. But there's also, you know, you're taking educated guesses and you're learning along the way. But there is a trial and error component. Like you need to try a bunch of stuff to figure out what works. And my belief is until you get your business where you want it to be, you're going to be on a mission to try more stuff and figure out what works and waste some time on stupid stuff.
Yeah, right.
Because you're like,
I really do agree. Yeah.
Because you're like, well, It seemed like a good idea at the time. Now I know why that didn't work. On to the next, yeah. Right? And occasionally you find things that work really well. You know, you and I have gone on a bunch of podcasts. I've talked about marketing partnerships which work fantastically well if you understand how they work. Mm-hmm. And like some of those things, that's where the leverage occurs. You know, I added win for me last week is I added 200 people to my email list in 1 week. Woo-hoo. Because of those things. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but I do some stuff that doesn't pay off so well.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, like I'll give you an example. We can live blog this right now. Yeah. You know, I've been writing a lot of long form content, and what I'm realizing is once I get kind of the baseline, like the, what I would call cornerstone content, here are the pieces that demonstrate answers to the most common questions people would have or issues that they would have when they come to me. Uh-huh. Once I get past that, I'm going to completely turn that off because video is where it's at. That yeah. is what's working for me.
Uh-huh.
If people can see my face while they hear my voice, And even better yet, interact with me.
Yeah.
That's where my wins are coming from. And so I'm going to double down on that.
And you just know what, to interject, for me, it's like audio. Like, I think you're a little better on camera than I am. I'm always like kind of looking off to the side and being thoughtful, which makes me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And in audio, that's not a problem. Anyway, please proceed.
Well, and what I was going to say is, you know, what I promoted at the top of the show, salesin30.com, sponsored by, you know, I kind of did that on a whim, and that started as an experiment.
Uh-huh.
And there was so much interest on LinkedIn, I thought, oh shit, I better make this because people want it. And now, you know, it's going to turn into my email course and sort of my initial offer to get people into my orbit. And who knows what the long-term value of that will be. But the fact that I'm going through this process and getting better at video, that's a side benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Getting leads from it. So there's all of these things. And I guess when I hear people trying to be so protective over an additional hour or two, I know that matters. And also I'll acknowledge I don't have kids yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that that also is a very real constraint on a lot of people's time. But I do believe this, and that is, there's a lot of people out there who want exactly what you want. And there's a lot of them that are really smart, and there's a lot of them that are also working hard. And so I think the way I look at it is, I need to put in enough time to give myself a reasonable chance to be in that competition.
You know, something I'm aware of just now that is part of my thinking about this that might be worth talking about is the fact that I'm trying to stack time investments on top of each other.
Yes.
And I can do that because I've made that choice about who I'm focused on serving and what, you know, change I'm trying to help them make in their business. Like, the, to me, I don't ever really question that stuff anymore. I mean, occasionally I'll be lying in bed at night and be like, you know, are things going to change dramatically someday in a way that harms my business? But aside from those just kind of outliers, there's this, I don't question that. And so that focus means that I can do the following. I can make time investments now that don't pay off right now, but that have a pretty good chance of either cultivating an asset or contributing to an asset that does pay off later. And that,
right,
that's part of why I feel fine about being a little bit wasteful with my time now, is that it's wasteful in one sense. It's like, it doesn't contribute to revenue this month or this week or this year even, but
right,
I have a pretty high degree of confidence that it is contributing to this larger asset I'm building. And so it's not like, if we use it, probably a terrible analogy of like, drilling for oil. It's not like drilling little exploratory holes here and there.
Right.
Which I think in the early stages of a business, that's absolutely what you have to do. And when I say a business, I'm talking about the kind of businesses that, you know, we run, these, you know, solo professional services firms. You have to drill those exploratory holes. Like, you know, video for you, you know, you got a little geyser of oil.
Right.
I know this analogy is becoming further, more and more offensive to me as I dig into it. I know it probably is to
let's
you.
Let's just beat it to death.
Yeah, well, let's just go with it at this point. The sunk cost fallacy says we should go with it. So anyway, you know, like, these little exploratory holes have value, but eventually you got to stop drilling those and say, okay, this is the one I'm drilling, and keep going deeper and deeper. And so my comments about how I use my time are really in the context of, I found the hole that I'm drilling and I'm satisfied with it, and I'm going to keep going. And so I think, you know, pushing that drill deeper into the earth is fueled in part by some wasteful uses of time for me right now.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. And, you know, I think we're both kind of hitting on the same points, which is, you got to kind of find your superpower and what's going to work that matches up, that's the middle of that Venn diagram between what you're exceptional at and, you know, where your natural talents lie and what your market wants.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just going to come to you, and the speed of your experimentation will be quite slow if you're not willing to try some things and put in some extra time. And I think this gets back to the question we got a couple weeks ago, which is, well, you know, would I be wasting my time if I did this marketing project that didn't work out? And, you know, I would always challenge you to think, well, let's not do things that are a complete waste of time. Mm-hmm. Let's do things to your point, Philip, that can be stacked and leveraged in some way in the future. Will I learn something? Will I meet someone? Like what are those things that I can do to add layers of leverage within the activities I'm undertaking? So
yeah,
I think I'm done on this topic. I'm talked out, man.
Sweet. Well, man, it seems like people, the next step is to go sign up for your video course.
Salesin30.com.
Salesin30.com. Sweet. That's a nice domain name.
It's not bad,
that wasn't
right?
Taken?
No, the number or the spelling, they're both available.
That just further reinforces my theory that if there's a three-letter, like, once you enter the three-word domain name territory, like, there's a lot of options that are not taken. Like, I mean, we got snookered somewhere along the line with offline podcasts because we did one search for that, and then the next day that domain was unavailable, which is highly suspicious to me. Still,
yes,
I still think about that. By the way, I'm like, that just seems there should be a law.
do you use GoDaddy for your domain registrar?
No, I use Namecheap. But if I'm like wondering if a domain is available, I do a whois from the terminal to see if it's owned before I go. Like if I'm just curious, if I'm domain name curious, I use whois. Uh-huh. If I have buying intent, I'll get a Namecheap and, you know, check there. But I'm still suspicious. Like Namecheap, I think, is more reputable than GoDaddy. But I still am hesitant to search through a domain registrar to see if a domain name is available because of what happened with offline podcast.
Yeah, and I searched on GoDaddy. And what I was going to say is they added now next to your domain. So I have this whole... You know, Kai talks about how he's the proud owner of hundreds of domains that'll never have a website.
Yeah.
And I don't have hundreds, but I have dozens where I'm just like, oh, I have an idea. I'll go buy the domain name because it makes me feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah.
And so now when you load your list in GoDaddy to manage your DNS settings with all your domains, it shows next to each domain what they think the estimated value is.
Wow.
Of the domain. And the reason they do that is you can click a button and they'll say, we'll sell it for you because they get a commission.
Yeah, sure.
And first of all, brilliant marketing and product strategy. Absolutely brilliant. Because it's like $1,172. You're like, yeah, I'd love to do that. Yeah. Maybe I don't want salesin30.com. But yeah, I do wonder when they added that feature, I thought immediately of offline.rocks and thought, huh, I wonder if they bought it and they're like, I'll sell it back to you for the low price of $3,000.
It could be. Anyway, three word domain names. It just seems like anything I think of is available or a suitable variation is available.
Well, I can, since we're just riffing on domain names now, I was shocked that I got my name, liston.io.
That's another score for you. You're racking up the wins over there in Portland.
Yeah, man. Yeah. For sure.
All right, dude. Good talking to you.
All right, man. Till next time. See you later, Philip.
Bye.